evening, everyone. I'm Linor Mutu. Welcome to Health Chat. On the program today, we will take a look at the coronavirus COVID-19 outbreak. Countries around the world are racing to enact measures to limit the spread of the COVID-19. We start in Nigeria, where health authorities are intensifying efforts to contain the virus after the West African nation announced its first cases of the disease. Part of Nigeria's readiness includes upgrading testing labs, screening at entry points like the airports, and public awareness campaigns. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
This is the National Reference Lab. It is one of five set up across Nigeria by the Nigerian Center for Disease Control, NCDC, to test for coronavirus. Nigeria's only confirmed case of the coronavirus was discovered here, says lab manager Akinpelu Akfolabi.
So far, what we of all the sample, 13 samples we've tested, it was that one that was positive. We tested here too and tested in Lagos. And that is the one that we discovered that was positive, of which we were able to detect. And the person is, they are managing the person.
Nigeria is one of only three African countries capable of testing the coronavirus in real time.
So the equipment we have and see the people when they are working and see that they have what it takes in terms of human resources, in terms of equipment. You see that we have it.
Nigerian authorities say it was an Italian man from Milan, a city badly hit by the coronavirus, who was the first confirmed case of the virus in sub-Saharan Africa. The World Health Organization named Nigeria among 12 countries in Africa at high risk of people contracting the virus. Authorities have responded by activating emergency operations, including public health awareness campaigns and heightened surveillance at entry points like the airport.
At the points of entry, we have mounted a lot of activities. I mean, enlightening people, checking people, getting information from them, and then at the same time comparing whatever information we are getting with what they are saying, because a lot of people tell lies.
With more than 95,000 coronavirus cases around the world and some 3,300 deaths, Nigerians are worried about the spreading virus, even though authorities are urging citizens to remain calm. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja.
Now we travel to Tanzania. The country is said to be one of the countries in Africa most at high risk of importing the coronavirus because of its high trade volume with China. At Tanzania's biggest market, traders are feeling the crunch as the availability of Chinese-made goods is shrinking. Meanwhile, authorities are preparing to prevent further transmission with intensified surveillance at the country's ports of entry. Charles Kombe reports from Dar es Salaam.
Dar es Salaam is Kariakoo market with a big difference in Tanzania and depends on manufactured products imported from China. But the outbreak of coronavirus, known as COVID-19, has dried up shipments from China.
Zaidi ni kwenye stock shelf. Unauza simu, simu zinakwisha, unataka aina ya simu unayotaka, unipate kwa wakati na wakati mwingine, bei zinapanda.
Those close trade ties with China makes Tanzania one of the African countries most at risk of importing COVID-19. Health authorities are on high alert.
The biggest aspect of what you have done within the country is to strengthen the port of entry, because as you know now, our threat is actually a case coming from the 58 affected countries, including China. And you have strengthened the port of entry. We have employed 100 more staff in the port of entries, and we have built their capacity to be able to detect the cases.
Tanzania's health ministry say they have 140 thermoscanners set up in all ports of entry.
Kwanza tumekuwa na vifaa vya kisasa kama mnavyoviona, lakini pia tumekuwa na ambulance ya kisasa kwa ajili ya kupeleka wagonjwa, lakini pia na wataalamu tuliokuwa nao wameongezeka mara mbili ili kuweza kuhakikisha tunakabiliana na hiyo. Na tumekuwa tukipata baadhi ya washukiwa na kuwapeleka, ingawa vipimo havisemi kwamba wana ugonjwa, lakini inaonekana mashine zetu ziko accurate na zinafanya kazi vizuri.
In Tanzania's more remote areas such as the tourist seat of Arusha, the East African Community's mobile lab project helps test suspected coronavirus infections.
With this capacity that the the partner states will be able to respond quickly. And if the outbreaks occur in remote areas where there may not be diagnostic capacity, the idea is that the mobile laboratory can move quickly and set themselves up in this remote area and then start diagnosing cases.
Meanwhile, Tanzanian doctors are urging everyone to take precautions to avoid the virus.
The biggest part involves your personal hygiene. When you enter and leave the washroom, make sure you wash your hands with soap. But also, we advise people to avoid contact. And if someone has a cough, they should cover their mouth.
Kama ukipatwa hali ya mafua kukohoa, jitahidi kupata kitu cha kujifunika, usikohoe bila kufunika uso wako.
But avoiding physical contact on the busy market is a challenge for traders like Hawadi. Even though the virus is a threat to their lives, without regular shipment of Chinese products, it's a bigger threat to their livelihoods. Charles Kombe for VOA News, Dar es Salaam.
The coronavirus, as we mentioned, is accelerating worldwide, the outbreak, that is. Risk areas, travel restrictions, protective measures. The World Health Organization has published recommendations for travelers to limit the spread of the disease. More details with Vincent McCurry.
For people traveling, here are some precautions to take before, during, and after the trip. It is prudent for sick travelers to delay or avoid traveling to affected areas, especially for the elderly and those with chronic illnesses. It is advisable to keep a distance of at least 1 meter from people with symptoms like cough or severe acute respiratory problems. The World Health Organization recommends washing hands, especially after contact with respiratory secretions. Okay, let me do a proper take. Take three. For people traveling, here are some precautions to take before, during, and after the trip. It is prudent for sick travelers to delay or avoid traveling to affected areas, especially for the elderly and those with chronic illnesses. It is advisable to keep a distance of at least 1 meter from people with symptoms like cough or severe acute respiratory problems. The World Health Organization recommends washing your hands, especially after contact with respiratory secretions. Hand hygiene includes cleaning your hands with soap and water or an alcohol-based hand sanitizer. Cover your nose and mouth with a bent elbow or a tissue when you cough or sneeze and immediately throw the tissue away, then wash your hands. A medical mask is not necessary if travelers have no symptoms, but if it is to be done, it is essential to follow best practices on how to wear and remove them. As with any trip, it is also advisable to follow good food hygiene practices as well as recommendations to reduce the risk of transmission of emerging pathogens from animals to humans. Travelers returning from affected areas should monitor symptoms themselves for 14 days and follow protocols established by host countries. For countries that decide to repatriate nationals from affected areas, they should consider the following measures to prevent further spread of COVID-19. Exit check shortly before flight, communication of risks to travelers and crew, preparation of the crew in the event of a sick passenger, entry control on arrival, and close monitoring for 14 days after arrival.
And it's time to take a short break. We'll continue to look at the coronavirus outbreak, COVID-19, in a moment. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
VOA's Our Voices television program is about more than just sitting and talking about women's issues. It's about listening to them and bringing their opinions to the table and making sure that their voices are heard. Because our lived experiences, our stories, and our voices will help shape the next generation.
Check your local TV listings and join the conversation each week with Our Voices on VOA.
This is Science in a Minute. In 2012, NASA's Kepler spacecraft discovered three odd exoplanets circling a 500 million-year-old star some 2,400 light-years away. 2 years later, scientists found that the planets seemed to have a lower density than any planet in the solar system, and that they appeared to be light, fluffy, and resembled cotton candy, the favorite circus treat. A team of scientists led by researchers at the University of Colorado Boulder recently used the Hubble Space Telescope to confirm these earlier findings and find that the planets in the Kepler-51 star system represent a new class of exoplanets nicknamed superpuffs. According to NASA, although they each have a mass that's no more than several times that of Earth, because of their atmospheres of hydrogen and helium are so bloated, they are nearly the size of Jupiter. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Voice of America's global news program, International Edition, brings you the biggest stories of the day. Our global correspondents report the news objectively and comprehensively, keeping you informed about important world events. International Edition provides analysis from the most seasoned experts around the world to put the day's events into context to better understand what's happening and how it may affect you. Listen to International Edition Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 17:05 Universal Time on the Voice of America or your local affiliate. You can also listen to the show on demand by visiting the program page at voanews.com or by subscribing to the show wherever you get your podcasts. VOA's International Edition, your go-to source for accurate, comprehensive, and objective news.
Welcome back. For those of you joining us late, tonight we are looking at the coronavirus outbreak, COVID-19. More than 113,000 people are infected globally and at least 4,000 people are dead, according to international statistics by the World Health Organization. Who is at risk of COVID-19? That's one of the big questions about the new coronavirus outbreak. VOA's Jason Patinkin addresses rumors spreading about why Africa has so many fewer cases than the rest of the world. He hears from Columbia University epidemiologist Dr. Elizabeth Redden, who says skin tone does not protect against the disease and that it's too early to tell whether climate and temperature can control the virus. Take a listen.
One rumor that's been going around a lot on WhatsApp, particularly in Africa, is the idea that people with dark skin are somehow protected from the virus, and maybe that's an explanation for why so far there have been very few reported cases in Africa. Other people are saying that it's due to the warm weather in Africa, and somehow the disease can't survive in that warmer weather, and so that's why there are fewer reported cases. Any truth to any of these? Any evidence for either of these?
So I don't think there's any evidence or any plausible biological explanation as to why skin tone would be protective against the virus. The question about weather is also an outstanding one. I don't think we have any reason to make a safe assumption that the weather would prevent the transmission of the virus. So we do know that for some viruses like the flu or coronaviruses like some of the common colds, there is a seasonality and we do see less transmission in warmer weather. However, there are other forms of coronavirus, such as the MERS virus, which transmit consistently across colder and warmer weather and don't show the same kind of seasonality pattern. So the weather example is also not a good bet and certainly not a reason that we should just, you know, wait it out till the summer comes in the Northern Hemisphere, or we should assume that anywhere that has warm weather now is not at risk. Now, to the interesting question of, you know, why have there been fewer cases in Africa? I think there's a few kind of plausible theories going around about this. One being that travel flows between the most heavily affected parts of China and countries in Africa are somewhat lighter. Two is that there's certainly an element of luck here. There's globally, compared to the global population, still relatively few people who are infected by the virus. So the chances of just having a certain person come in contact with a certain person and then travel, there is an element of randomness and potentially luck in that. To the point about travel flows, there was an interesting article in the Lancet Medical Journal recently analyzing data about air travel to and from Africa and China, and suggesting that based on travel patterns, the countries that would be most at risk would be Algeria, Egypt, and South Africa, and that those did in fact turn out to be several of the first countries that had nationals affected. There were cases in Algeria, in Egypt, and South African nationals who are outside of South Africa were affected. There's also cases reported now in Senegal and Nigeria. I think the last explanation that I've heard about this that is less plausible is that there's very widespread transmission, but either it's gone undetected or there's an active cover-up. It does appear from the experience in multiple countries that once the virus arrives, particularly if there's a limited response, it spreads pretty quickly. It's not really plausible that there are hundreds or thousands of cases that have simply gone undetected, let alone that we'd see the level of coordination required across many different actors, from families to health systems, that would be needed if there was some kind of active cover-up. So I think it really has to do with the travel flows and a little bit of luck.
Could it also have to do with the experience that a lot of African countries have with dealing with outbreaks? Of course, the Ebola outbreak, there have been two Ebola outbreaks in recent years in Africa, and African countries have really stepped up their screening at borders, both land borders and at airports. Could that be helping African countries, that skill and that capacity and experience, could that be helping in this case?
I think that's potentially a great resource here. I think the cases that are coming in are a bit due to other factors, but certainly the ability to control and manage, put in place appropriate screening and infection control procedures are critical in preventing, a couple of cases from rapidly growing to hundreds or thousands of cases. So it's certainly an asset that those public health systems, those health security systems are in place in a number of countries, and that capacity and experience is there in a number of places, particularly in West Africa and in the DRC, where they've dealt with recent outbreaks in particular in relation to Ebola. That's certainly an asset, and it speaks to the value in developing these systems so that they're in place and ready to go and the local capacity exists when a new outbreak occurs.
And one important question is how to avoid getting the COVID-19 coronavirus. So we touched on it when we looked at travelers. But the answer may not be so simple. Can garlic, mouthwash, or chlorine protect you from the outbreak? How about antibiotics or hand dryers? And do those face masks make a difference? And another look at some of the rumors out there about the COVID-19, Columbia University epidemiologist Dr. Elizabeth Redin explained to VOA's Jason Patinkin what the science says about the best ways to stay healthy.
One thing that perhaps is the most important and the thing that is really on people's minds the most is, well, okay, but how do we make sure I don't get it? And I've seen many different rumors on things you can supposedly do to avoid getting COVID-19. They include eating garlic. They include rubbing sesame oil on your skin, taking alcohol baths or chlorine baths, rinsing your mouth or nose with saline solution or salt water, mouthwash is another one, using hand dryers or hair dryers, ultraviolet lamps, taking antibiotics. I mean, I'm skeptical that any of this works, but at this point, is there anything that works? Is there anything that is proven to prevent getting this disease?
So I think you hit the nail on the head that there's really a tremendous amount of guesswork and speculation circulating, particularly on social media, about tips and tricks for infection control to prevent getting the virus. I think one of the most important things in an outbreak is to have clear, consistent, accurate communication. So I would encourage anyone who's looking for information on this to go to the CDC website at cdc.gov. And they have really very clear and simple and science-based steps that you can take to protect yourself and that we can all take to limit the transmission of this virus. So first and foremost, if you're well, meaning you have no fever, cough, or shortness of breath, there's a few simple things you can do. One, avoid contact with people who are sick. Two, don't touch your face. And three, wash your hands regularly for 20 seconds with soap and water, or use an alcohol-based hand sanitizer. And those are really the critical steps. That's what CDC is recommending right now for people who are well. Those are the core things to go back to, and that's what the science supports. There's a separate set of recommendations if you do have cough, fever, or difficulty breathing, and you've been in close contact with someone who either has a confirmed case of the disease or has traveled to an area where there's ongoing spread. And in that case, you would stay home. If you go out to get medical care, wear a mask, separate yourself from people in your household, wipe down surfaces, call your doctor before visiting, and not sharing basic household items like cups and plates with other people. These are kind of common sense things that you would do anyways if you had a flu or a bad cold. The third set of recommendations is really for healthcare professionals who need a different level of infection control. But for the majority of us, we'll fall into category one, and it's really about the basic avoiding people who are sick, don't touch your face, and wash your hands. It's important to note that there's no recommendation right now for people who are not sick to wear face masks. In fact, please leave the face masks for people who might be sick and need to travel out to a doctor and for healthcare professionals. That's really a key public good that we can all do to promote infection control here.
It seems like masks are the thing that most people worried about the virus, at least when you look at photos of people worried about the virus, everyone's wearing a mask. So you're saying actually a mask isn't going to help you very much from stopping getting the disease.
Well, I'm saying the recommendation right now is not for people who are well to be wearing masks, and that in fact it's important that we leave the supply of masks more than sufficient for people who may be experiencing some symptoms, whether it's flu or potentially a case of coronavirus. Leave the masks for those people to wear them, and certainly for our health workers in health facility settings to have an ample supply. I think if there's question or concern, the CDC website is updated daily. It's worth continuing to check in there, but it's not recommended for people who are well to be wearing a mask in everyday life right now.
Essentially, if someone is feeling sick and may have the virus, if they're wearing a mask, that's a good way to keep the virus to them while they're heading to the doctor rather than potentially spreading it to others.
That's exactly right.
One last question about masks. One thing that I've heard is that wearing a mask may actually increase your risk because you end up touching your face and adjusting the mask, and so that just increases the hand-face contact, which could increase your susceptibility to the virus. Is there any truth to that?
It seems possible. It would probably depend on the case. I guess I'd go back to the underlying recommendation of limit touching your face. So anything that you can do to limit touching your face would be a good step to stay in line with that. And particularly since it's not recommended to wear a mask anyways, no need to kind of complicate that matter.
Now, the most severe COVID-19 cases seem to be among elderly people, and early data from China suggests men have been more affected than women. Does that mean young people have nothing to fear? Again, here is VOA's Jason Patinkin with Columbia University epidemiologist Dr. Elizabeth Redding.
Another thing that people are worried about is, of course, who can get it? Who is at risk? Because people want to know, are them and their loved ones at risk of getting this? And so far, there's been, you know, most of the deaths have been concentrated in the elderly population. So you have people saying, well, look, kids don't have to worry about it, or young people don't have to worry about it. If you're healthy, you don't have to worry about it. Is that the case? Is this something that only elderly people or people whose health is already compromised need to worry about?
No, I think our safest assumption at this point is that anyone can get this virus. I think the idea that the virus is limited to certain groups is coming from two factors. Well, one, if we look at the patient population, the confirmed cases that we know about, we do see that there are more confirmed cases among certain groups, among people who are somewhat older. So the original data from China was showing that much of the patient population was over 30. Some of the initial data from China was showing that there were more men in the patient population or those people diagnosed. However, we have seen infections certainly across genders, across the age spectrum, from very young children to much older people. And looking at the patient population only allows us to see who's being diagnosed. So there's a major question that remains about, for example, in children, whether children are simply less likely to get the virus or whether they, for some reason, are just having milder symptoms and so are therefore less likely to be diagnosed. We don't know which is the case right now. We have to assume that it's possible for children to get it, and there are ongoing scientific investigations to clarify this question. Similarly, with the initial data on men and women, we don't know if men were showing up more in the patient population, some of the earlier groups, because they were, for some reason, more susceptible, which would be a little bit hard to explain biologically, or simply because they were more likely to travel, more likely to have more contacts, more exposures, because more men in China smoke, leading to, you know, possible respiratory susceptibility, because men were more likely to seek care or get diagnosed. Again, we don't know whether that's the piece of the pie we're seeing or whether for some reason that's a more susceptible group. So for now, we should assume that anyone could be at risk for the virus.
And now Jason Patinkins and Dr. Elizabeth Redding discuss where is the coronavirus from and who's at risk. Take a listen.
One of the first things with this COVID-19 virus that people are worried about is where they can get it from. So there's a bunch of myths about where you can get this from. Some people are saying that you can get it from your pets. Some people are worried that any contact with anything from China, whether it's mail or packages that have been sent by China or from Chinese restaurants. Can you clear up, you know, where does this virus really come from and how does it actually transmit between people or to people?
Sure. So probably the best way, as you said, to tackle those myths is to go back to what is this virus, where does it come from, and how, what is the science on how it's actually spread. So the virus that is causing the current COVID-19 outbreak is a beta coronavirus, which is a family of viruses that have their origins in bats. And rarely we see that a new coronavirus can cross over from the animal population to the human population. That's what we understand happened in China with the virus causing the current outbreak. Interestingly, scientists believe that this outbreak of the virus has come from a single recent emergence from an animal reservoir. Now, how on earth would they know that? Well, actually, what they can do is look at the virus that's showing up in patients at the U.S., look at the genetic sequence of that virus and compare it to the genetic sequence of the original virus from China. We see very, very little difference between those two. Allow scientists to essentially construct a family tree showing that this is really a recent crossover and also likely coming from a single virus. So that's our best understanding of where this virus came from. We have seen this type of coronavirus in the past, most notably with the SARS outbreak in 2003 and the more recent MERS outbreak. So that's where the virus came from. There's, you know, strong theory, strong science behind that.
Another myth out there is that this virus was leaked from a secret lab in Wuhan, and it's escaped. It was created by the government, and now it's, they're trying to cover it up by claiming it's an outbreak.
There's really no evidence for this explanation or idea that it came from a lab. That would make for good movie material, but there's no science or historical evidence behind that. In terms of how it's spreading currently, the spread is primarily person to person. We've seen this since the early days of the outbreak in China, and it continues now. What does that mean? It means that the virus can be spread through close contact, and that means sustained contact of less than 6 feet between two people. And it's spread through respiratory droplets. So,
and that's all the show for today. Thanks for joining us. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.